This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
The Common Agenda. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal. Along with Jennifer Koschenka, it is Tuesday, October 17. Thanks for joining us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Saying the two men are closer than ever, President Trump declared that he and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell are on the same page when it comes to tax reform.
Two of the most destructive wildfires in California history are now under control, but the danger is not over.
NFL owners meeting in New York today to discuss how to handle national anthem protests by players.
And as open enrollment season arrives for health insurance benefits, the things to keep in mind.
Like a growing number of Americans, I always face a choice between different plans when open enrollment season comes around. For the last couple of years, the choice has been between a high deductible plan and between, you know, a regular plan. And so 2 years ago, I chose the high deductible plan, but I've always wondered, you know, was that a smart choice? Did I really come out ahead that way?
Wall Street Journal reporter Ann Turgeson on which health plan you should pick. She's here in about 20 minutes. Is there a new effort of collaboration unfolding in Washington, declaring their relationship outstanding? President Trump held a joint news conference with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell yesterday to announce the two are on the same page when it comes to overhauling the tax code. The joint appearance came at the start of a week that will see Mr. McConnell's Senate vote on a budget resolution, which must pass in order to pave the way for Republicans to take up tax legislation.
We have the same agenda. We've been friends and acquaintances for a long time. We talk frequently. We don't give you a readout every time we have a conversation, but frequently we talk on the weekends about the issues that are before us.
Tensions had been churning between the two since August when Mr. McConnell told an audience in Kentucky that the president had, quote, excessive expectations about how quickly the legislative process works. Mr. Trump also has blamed Mr. McConnell for failing to corral the votes to repeal Obamacare. Well, President Trump is trying to turn back the clock on the Obama era, largely because he's frustrated by the slow pace of progress on his legislative agenda.
I believe Republicans and Democrats are, as we speak, working together very hard right now, working together to do an intermediate plan, a short-term plan, because Obamacare is a disaster.
The most recent examples involve health insurance and the Iran nuclear deal. A look at others and potential future moves from Niall Stanage, associate editor and White House correspondent at The Hill. Niall, what's the basic premise here?
The basic premise is that President Trump has obviously been frustrated by the slow pace of progress on his legislative agenda, but he has actually acted in such a way as to try to unpick President Obama's legacy on a whole number of fronts by executive order and other actions like that.
The most noticeable ones being what, Niall?
Well, I think last week, obviously, we saw the suggestion that he was not going to certify Iran and that he was going to start ending government subsidies for insurers under the Affordable Care Act. There have been a number of other ones, obviously, the decision to pull out of the Paris Climate Accord, to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and approving the Keystone XL pipeline, which seems to me to be one that people often forget about for whatever reason.
What else could be on the chopping block in your mind?
Well, I mean, obviously, one of the things that there's a big question mark over is DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. That will expire in March unless there's a legislative fix found for that. So that is endangered. And then just last week, we had the Environmental Protection Agency head, Scott Pruitt, announcing that he would try to repeal President Obama's blueprint for dealing with climate change, which is known as the Clean Power Plan. So both of those things in grave danger.
All right. Politically speaking, is this President Trump able to say he's delivering on promises because it's things haven't happened legislatively?
Yes, well, he is at least able to make that case. I mean, some people would argue against him, obviously, but he's at least able to make the case that he's had the capacity to sort of get around congressional inaction by doing some of these things. And I think many of these actions do have a real appeal for conservatives and for the people who are the most loyal members of President Trump's base of support.
We're speaking with Niall Stanage, associate editor at The Hill, also a White House columnist. He's written a piece entitled Trump Tries to Turn Back Clock on Obama Era. There was an analyst or observer in your story who said that President Obama was very effective at these executive orders or directives, and then President Trump is kind of using the same methodology but to undo that stuff.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I think this is a broader point, really, Gordon, about the political culture in which we live at the moment. Obviously, it's a very polarized country. That is reflected in Congress to a large extent. And the various procedural rules around Congress make it rather difficult to make progress in that way. I mean, President Obama, for example, had pressed for congressional action on immigration for some time and ultimately went for executive orders instead. So I think there is a parallel, though an inexact one, that can be drawn there between how each president has behaved.
Yeah, you mentioned, too, that there are some issues on which the president has sent conflicting signals. Can you explain?
Well, I mean, DACA, which is one of the things that we're talking about, is a prime example of that. He has at times expressed considerable sympathy or empathy for the young people who were offered a measure of protection by that program, yet obviously he's also suggesting he will end it. His rhetoric on immigration generally has been quite hardline on occasions, but then, as I say, accompanied by this propensity to offer some level of human understanding to the people protected by a program that he intends to end.
Does this does the approach of, say, undoing President Obama's stuff or doing what President Trump promised that he can't get done legislatively create a more friction politically? Say, between the White House and Capitol Hill or between some Republicans?
Yes, it could do. I mean, clearly President Trump has been not reluctant to attack some fellow Republicans sometimes.
Thanks, Niall. Niall Stanage, associate editor and White House correspondent at The Hill. The U.S. is trying to stay neutral in an all-out battle that's broken out between Iraq and Kurdish Peshmerga forces, two of its closest ground partners in battling Islamic State. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The Prime Minister of Iraq ordered troops into the Kirkuk province yesterday to take strategic locations that the Kurdish Peshmerga forces had previously taken. The Kurds, who run their own semi-autonomous region in northern Iraq, voted overwhelmingly in favor of independence, defying not only Baghdad, but also regional powers and the U.S., which warned it would distract from the final battles to defeat Islamic State. The latest events raise concerns about a broader civil war unfolding in Iraq. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. The Wall Street Journal says the situation laid bare the risks of Washington's decision to defeat Islamic State by backing a pair of local forces without addressing their long-simmering resentments against one another. For years, the U.S. has avoided drawing up a definitive plan for dealing with Iraq after the retreat of Islamic State, preferring instead to wait until the group's final defeat and leave the matter up to Iraqi politicians. It's 15 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Fire officials in California say they've turned a corner on what has been one of the deadliest outbreaks of wildfires ever to hit the state. Some of the fires are now better than 50% contained, but officials warn that 14 large fires are still not fully contained and remain dangerous. So far, 40,000 people have been evacuated, but thousands are being permitted to return home to areas deemed safe. Susan Hemstreet returned to find her home was okay, but that wasn't the case for others in her neighborhood.
It's hard. You know, we're so grateful our house is okay, but to look out on our neighbor's house being gone.
The blazes have raged out of control for over a week, killing at least 41. One of those deaths occurred yesterday morning when the driver of a water truck helping battle the flames, veered off the road and rolled over. In Sonoma County, 88 people remain unaccounted for. 700 others are in shelters. The fires have destroyed some 5,700 homes and other buildings. 20 minutes after the hour on this morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, President Trump and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell have reaffirmed their alliance in a raucous Rose Garden news conference that also underscored their sharp differences. The president claimed they were longtime friends, now closer than ever. The reserve Senate leader allowed they share goals and speak often.
If you read the papers, you think I'm like on one island and they're like on the other. Well, it's not the way it is. We have a fantastic relationship. I'm friends with most of them, I can say, and I don't think anybody could have much of a higher percentage.
Trump and McConnell appeared side by side for more than half an hour. At various points, the president denounced the Russia-Trump campaign investigation, lauded himself for his record on judicial nominations, and claimed that past presidents hadn't contacted bereaved family members to mourn lost service members. The U.S. is calling for calm after Iraqi government forces seized the northern city of Kirkuk and key installations from Kurdish control. State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert urged all parties to avoid further clashes. Iraqi soldiers moved into Kirkuk 3 weeks after the Kurdistan region held a controversial independence referendum. They're aiming to retake areas under Kurdish control since Islamic State militants swept through the region. Attorneys for Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott are set for an emergency hearing in federal court in New York today as they try again to stop the running back's 6-game suspension over domestic violence allegations. Elliott's legal team filed a request for a temporary restraining order yesterday and will get a hearing in the Southern District of New York. The case is shifting to New York because an appeals court in New Orleans ordered the dismissal of Elliott's lawsuit in Texas. Todd Frazier and Aaron Judge belted 3-run homers, and C.C. Sabathia worked 6 scoreless innings as the New York Yankees whipped the Houston Astros 8-1 in Game 3 of the ALCS last night. Judge was just 4-for-32 in the postseason before his second playoff homer put the Yankees ahead 8-0 in the fourth inning. John Sterling had the call on WFAN.
Swung on, and a line drive to left. It is high, it is far, it is gone! He hit a line drive bullet to left, a 3-run home run, a Judgian blast.
The Astros lead the series 2-1, game 4 this afternoon in New York.
So wait, it was a line drive, but it was also high far.
Yeah.
Because you
it
have
took
to.
Took off. You, it was low, then it took off.
You have to stick to your shtick script. That's why. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Here comes that package in the mail from Human Resources or the long email from the benefits folks in HR. It's open enrollment season for your medical insurance. Will you roll over the same plan from this year or research where you could save or improve things? Here's what to consider from Wall Street Journal reporter Ann Turgeson. Ann, set this up.
Like a growing number of Americans, I always face a choice between different plans when open enrollment season comes around, which is actually at my company going to happen very soon. For the last couple of years, the choice has been between a high deductible plan and between, you know, a regular plan. And so 2 years ago, I chose the high deductible plan, but I've always wondered, you know, was that a smart choice? Did I really come out ahead that way? So I did an analysis that kind of walked through the numbers for my plan choices, and that analysis determined that, in fact, the high deductible plan did come out to be the better choice.
Did you find there were some general rules of thumb?
Well, I think, you know, the conventional wisdom is that if you have low medical costs, you're a healthy person, you have low medical costs, you're likely to come out ahead with a high deductible plan. The reason being that high deductible plans have lower premiums than, you know, they almost always have lower premiums than just conventional insurance plans. So you're going to save a lot of money up front on that monthly premium that you pay or the premium you pay every paycheck. And if you have low medical expenses, high deductible plans require people to spend more on their medical care in general. But if you're a healthy person who has generally pretty low medical expenses, you're going to save more in the premiums than the cost that you're going to incur by switching to a plan that requires you to pay more.
All right. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Ann Turgeson. Her piece is called "It's Open Enrollment Time. What Health Plan Should I Pick?" Explain too, because it does seem that some of the larger health insurance companies have tools on their websites. Like you looked at actual spending versus a worst case scenario.
Right. So actually, I did that on my own. But it is true that some of the larger insurance companies, including the insurance company that my company, that our plans come through, they offer tools. And the tool that the company that we use offered told me that I should use the high deductible plan. But I had always been a little bit skeptical because, you know, to the extent that I save money through a high deductible plan, I think it's pretty clear that employers who subsidize employees' premiums, as a lot of them do, they also save on these high deductible plans. So I always kind of in the back of my mind was wondering, you know, am I getting like objective advice when the insurance company tells me you should go with a high deductible plan? So I did my own analysis, and my own analysis did confirm that. And it was pretty labor intensive, I have to say, the amount of analysis that has to go into something like that.
Thanks, Anne. Wall Street Journal reporter Anne Turgeson. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us Tuesday, October 17. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Trump and McConnell present a united front on tax reform. Improving news in California's devastating wildfires. Former FBI Director James Comey was drafting statements about the Hillary email scandal 2 months before he even recommended no criminal charges. Netflix added more subscribers and plans more original programming. NFL owners meet to discuss national anthem protests today. Rick Pitino officially out at Louisville Hoops. And the Michigan girl making the world a better place. That story in about 20 minutes. The wildfires that began October 8th in Northern California have surpassed the state's fire death record. They have been not only the deadliest, but spread with unusual fury. Thousands of people in the fire's path were forced to try to save not only themselves and their loved ones, but also property and businesses in fateful, often split-second decisions like leave now or wait for an evacuation order. Do you go back for the dog? Stay in the car or run? Turn right or turn left? Their choices would, in many cases, determine who lived and who died. It's a gripping story from Wall Street Journal reporter Ian Lovett in California. Ian, what did you find?
I think the thing that really separates this fire from some of the other wildfires that we've had in California in recent years is just how fast the winds whipped the flames in and how far they went into residential areas. You know, we are in California accustomed to there being wildfires this time of year, but normally they are kept in pretty wildland areas. And if you live sort of out in the wildland, you might be threatened, but that's usually something you're prepared for. In this case, we were getting 50 or 70 mile an hour winds all through Northern California, and they were just picking up embers and throwing them miles ahead. So people who were in areas like where you're seeing these videos, where they had been there for decades, had never dealt with wildfire, were suddenly looking outside and seeing their fence was on fire, or the trees were on fire, or the home next door was on fire. And sometimes they went inside and tried to pack stuff. And in certain cases, that actually cost them their lives. And in other cases, people just ran out immediately with whatever they had on, not even shoes or not even proper clothes sometimes.
Wow. The stat that jumped out at me in your story, which really captured the split-second decision some of these folks made, was that you said the fires or the flames were advancing a full football field every 3 seconds. That's like car speed.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what, according to the American Red Cross, who's now dealing with, you know, tens of thousands of evacuees, they're saying that's how fast it's moving.
It's incredible. So the even the video from the one sheriff's officer you have embedded in this story, I mean, he's using his windshield wipers to knock off embers. I mean, the stuff he's driving through is almost unthinkable.
Yeah, some of the videos, if you watch, are pretty incredible. You see people driving, and it looks like it's sunrise or sunset. There's just this sort of glow on the horizon everywhere. And what people were saying was there wasn't a wall of fire you get sometimes, the way when a fire is burning through a forest, but that the wind was throwing embers so far that things were catching even when the fire was still a little ways away. So people would feel like they were in a safe area, and they'd be driving through some of these emergency workers yelling at people to evacuate. And then suddenly the side of the road, the bushes would be on fire, the fences would be on fire. And they had to turn around. And a number of emergency workers said that they ended up in situations where they knew there were people trapped in houses further up, but they were looking around. They were worried that the embers were going to stop their own car's engines, and that they wanted to keep trying to save people, but they had to stop and go back.
Jeez. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Ian Lovett. His piece is called "Wildfire Victims Had Only Seconds to Make Fateful Choices." You were telling the story, too, of the one family who hopped in the car. It might have been at the beginning of the story, and they were on their escape route, and then they kind of came to a T in the road, and they had to decide whether to go right or go left. Explain what they were going through and what they decided and why.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the type of choice that a lot of families faced that night. That was the Monroe family up in Redwood Valley in Mendocino County. And they live on a hillside in a pretty secluded area, and so they drove down a long driveway towards the main road, which would lead to the 101, which is the highway to kind of get out of the area. But when they looked to the right to turn towards the 101 where they wanted to go, both sides of the road were totally on fire. And you can see that in some video that other residents shot there. And so to the left, what they had was this kind of backcountry road that led through the woods, across a bunch of creeks, and eventually out the other side. But they don't usually go that way except during summer. They hadn't been down it in months. They worried that if they went that way and then the fire kept going into that part of the forest, they would be completely cut off from everyone and killed. But they saw it was to the right, and they went left. And luckily for them, the fire did not follow that way, and they were able to get across those creeks and to safety.
Who was not as lucky with the decision?
So a number of people who hesitated even a little bit ended up paying for that, unfortunately.
I see, and that's Wall Street Journal reporter Ian Lovett in California. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you could spend some time with us. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well, @GordonDeal. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, LeBron James may be one of the wealthiest American athletes, but that doesn't mean that he also can't be one of the cheapest. Rumors of James's frugality have been floating around for years, most of them coming from Dwayne Wade, his former teammate with the Miami Heat and now reunited with James on the Cleveland Cavaliers. The two recently sat down for an interview on ESPN, and James confirmed his cheapness, saying that it was falsely true how cheap he is. He revealed that he doesn't use his phone in places where there's no Wi-Fi for fear of data roaming. He doesn't pay for apps on his phone, and he still uses the free version of Pandora with the commercials, something that irks his teammates when they're in the weight room together. Can you imagine trying to push up some weight? Commercial comes on. All of this is a little head-scratching when you consider that James has made over $200 million in his NBA career before you even count the gobs of endorsement money. But as if we didn't already know, it is good to be the king. Upon hearing about James's aversion to paid Pandora, the streaming service reached out to him via Twitter and offered to hook him up with a premium account on the house.
Really?
And I'm guessing that he's probably going to take it, right?
I guess.
No, knowing how cheap he is.
Right. That was all the endorsement that Pandora needed,
right,
in order to just give him the free access.
Right, right. Just him mentioning
just
their
mention.
Name on an ESPN
yeah.
interview probably right. Paid for it, you know, a million times over.
Let's try it. Pandora, Pandora, Pandora.
Yeah, good luck.
Okay, we're going to find Mike Gavin in Central New Jersey.
Okay. Yeah.
Come hook him up.
Right.
By the way, as they often say, it's not what you make,
yes.
right? It's what you keep.
Right,
when
sure.
When it comes to income. But $200 million, as you point out, is a good starting point.
Yes, we know you've known to be frugal yourself. You got it down pat. And it may be Taco Tuesday, but it's another Mexican-American food favorite that's making some news today. Prosecutors in a Texas county said a juvenile Justice Department employee is accused of stealing $1.2 million worth of fajitas over 9 years. The Cameron County District Attorney's Office said Gilberto Escamaria took the day off for a medical appointment August 7th, and a driver from the department's meat vendor called the kitchen to inform workers of an 800-pound fajita delivery. A confused kitchen worker explained to the driver that the department doesn't serve fajitas, leading the equally baffled driver to tell her that he's been delivering fajitas to juvenile justice for 9 years. Escamaria was fired promptly August 8th and arrested August 9th when authorities executed a search warrant on his home and found packets of fajitas in his refrigerator. Investigators said the man had stolen a total of over $1.25 million worth of fajitas.
Jeez.
Once again, proving that we were in the wrong business. We talked about sauce, right?
Yeah.
We should have gotten into the sauce business. Again, probably wouldn't have to wake up at 2 a.m. to be in the sauce business.
Right.
Also, the fajita business seems pretty lucrative as well.
Oh, that's one of those great dishes, too, when it comes to your table at a restaurant.
Oh, yes.
It's just sizzling and steaming all over the place.
Yeah.
It sticks to your clothes for like 2 days.
Right.
Right. But, man, I usually go the combo. I like the shrimp, the steak, and the chicken.
Yes.
Yeah, with the peppers.
Yeah.
Onions, what else? It's sour cream, right? A little guac.
All of it.
Comes with that. The sauce. Oh, yeah.
Bring it all to me right now.
That's good stuff, right? Wash it down with a Corona. Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Here's some good news for your wallet. You'll probably keep paying less for gasoline despite new tensions in the Middle East driving up the price of oil. American drivers have paid lower prices at the pump for 5 straight weeks, and the cost of filling up could soon slide back to levels last seen before Hurricanes Harvey and Irma. USA Today says the fall is due to a combination of things, including peak driving season winding down and U.S. refining returning to normal after storm-related disruptions. Prices at the pump spiked temporarily as a result of disruptions to Texas oil refineries caused by Hurricane Harvey, which made landfall August 25th. But in the week ending Sunday, a gallon of regular was down more than 8%. From the post-hurricane high. The trend of lower gas prices is expected to continue, despite an increase of around 2 cents yesterday to 247 due to fears of supply disruptions after Iraqi forces tried to seize oil fields in the Kurdish-held city of Kirkuk in northern Iraq. It is 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, a week after fleeing wildfires, tens of thousands of Californians are drifting back into their neighborhoods. While some will face the prospect of destroyed homes, all will face the possibility of lasting emotional damage. Fire Captain Rick Crawford says firefighters have gained control of some areas as weather improves.
We lost the wind. That was the main thing, is that the wind basically has ceased now. That allows us to get right up on top of that fire and do a direct attack.
The fires have killed at least 41 people and destroyed nearly 6,000 homes. For U.S. presidents, meeting the families of military personnel killed in war is about as wrenching as the presidency gets. President Trump's suggestion that his predecessors fell short in that duty is bringing a visceral reaction from those who witnessed those grieving encounters.
The traditional way, if you look at President Obama and other presidents, most of them didn't make calls. A lot of them didn't make calls. I like to call when it's appropriate, when I think I'm able to do it.
A former deputy chief of staff to President Obama called Trump's statement in the Rose Garden a lie. Trump says he had written letters to the families of 4 soldiers killed in an October 4th ambush in Niger and plans to call them. House Speaker Paul Ryan says he's bullish about the Republican-authored tax overhaul bill passing Congress and being signed into law with Democratic support in the Senate.
I feel pretty confident we're going to get it done. But the Senate is always a pretty narrow needle to thread.
Ryan told a meeting of the Wisconsin Chamber of Commerce that the tax overhaul is better wired for success than the failed health care proposal because Republicans in the Senate and House more or less agree on how it should go. No surprise here, Louisville has officially fired Coach Rick Pitino nearly 3 weeks after the school acknowledged that its men's basketball program is being investigated as part of a federal corruption probe. The move officially ends Pitino's 16-year tenure with the program, a run that included winning the 2013 NCAA championship, but was tarnished by several embarrassing off-court incidents.
Thank you, Jen. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. The world is a better place today thanks to a 5-year-old little girl from the Upper Peninsula in Michigan. 2 weeks ago, the girl named Sunshine Olfke started counting the coins from her piggy bank. Her grandmother wanted to then know why Sunshine was putting all the coins into a plastic bag and then into her school backpack. CBS News says Sunshine announced that she was taking the money to school for her friend Layla, who does not have the money to buy milk. Also turns out that about half the kids in Sunshine's class don't get milk, which costs 45 cents per carton or about 180 bucks a month for every child in the class to have milk every day during snack time. Sunshine's grandma started a GoFundMe page hoping to raise $700 to cover the cost of milk for the entire semester. You know where this is going. This week, they surpassed the $1,000 mark, and every student in Sunshine's class will now have the option to get free milk for not only the rest of the semester, but for the rest of the year. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.